Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, September 18th. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. Now let's get started with some local news headlines. Our first local news story today has a headline that reads, Decades of Dedication. Air Guard Unit Marks 75 Years of Service. For three quarters of a century, a relatively small group of airmen has worked in Fort Dodge with an often bewildering array of electronics to make their country safer. The members of the 133rd Test Squadron have truly made an impact, not only in Iowa, but for security and stability across the globe. Major General Stephen Osborne, the Adjutant General of the Iowa National Guard, said Saturday. Osborne, who commands both the Army National Guard and the Air National Guard, spoke Saturday afternoon during a ceremony marking the 75th anniversary of the squadron, which was established in 1948. The ceremony began with a KC-135 Stratotanker flying low and slow over the squadron's facility near the Fort Dodge Regional Airport. The plane, which refuels other military aircraft in midair, came from the 185th Air Refueling Wing in Sioux City. Before and after the ceremony, an open house was held in the squadron's compound, at which visitors could see some of the equipment the local airmen work with. The equipment on display ranged from a big truck with a radar antenna on it to computer monitors. While the displays were impressive, Osborne reminded those gathered for the anniversary celebration that, quote, it truly is about the people. We are here to honor those men and women who dedicate a part of their lives to this organization, he said. He thanked the families of squadron members and the Fort Dodge community for their support. The squadron commander, Lieutenant Colonel Jason Kalashia, also thanked the families of squadron members, especially for their support whenever the unit was called to active duty. The people back home kept the home fires burning, and it made it possible for us to focus on the tasks of the deployment, he said, during Saturday's ceremony. To the members of this squadron standing in formation, he said, you are the best in the command and control business. Kalashia also described the time period shortly after World War II, during which the squadron was founded. The Great War was over, but the threats across the world remained, he said. He noted that the year before the squadron was established, the Soviet Union blockaded West Berlin, forcing the United States to airlift supplies into the city for 11 months. According to Kalashia, the unit, first called the 133rd Aircraft Control and Warning Squadron, was based at the former Ennis Airport on the east side of Fort Dodge. It had 26 officers and 379 enlisted men, he said. Today's squadron has about 130 members. He said in 1954, the squadron moved to a building on the north side of Fort Dodge, which it initially shared with the Army National Guard. In 1959, the unit moved to its current building. In 1951, during the Korean War, the unit was called to active duty and deployed to Alexandria Air Force Base in Louisiana. Over the years, the unit's name has changed. It has always had the number 133, but it has been called the Aircraft Control and Warning Flight, Air Control Flight, Tactical Control Squadron, Forward Air Control Flight, Air Control Squadron, and finally, since 2004, Test Squadron. Today, it has two missions. One, as its name implies, is testing electronics radios, radars, and similar systems that the Air Force is considering. We test incoming and new equipment for what's called the Air Control Community, said Master Sergeant Samuel Hopley. Squadron members try out all those systems before they are sent to the rest of the Air Force. It's an important role that we've played for 20 years, he said. The unit also retains a role in directing American military aircraft. Squadron members track and direct military planes so that they can safely complete their missions and return home, according to First Lieutenant Sean Flynn. It's our job to inform the pilots out there of everything that's going on, he said. Safety is definitely our number one priority when talking to pilots, he added. Our next local news story has a headline that reads, On a Call in Gowrie, Farnham Ready to Help at a Moment's Notice. And there's an editor's note that goes along with this article that reads, This feature first ran in a special publication called Hometown Pride, published June 24, 2023, featuring people and organizations from Fort Dodge and the surrounding area who are making a difference in their communities. And the dateline for the article is Gowrie. It reads, While chatting with a customer recently in her farm and country insurance office in downtown Gowrie, Marcia Farnham stood up from her desk. That instantly made one of the signs of her service to the community visible. It's a pager she wears on her waist that will loudly summon her to calls with the Southwest Webster Emergency Medical Service. So what happens if she gets a page in the middle of her workday? She answers it. I have a sign for the door, Farnham said. It reads, Gone on an ambulance call. I recently upgraded it by laminating it, she said. Farnham has been a certified EMT since 2005. She joined the ambulance service in 2001. She quickly realized that the people that they were serving and the people they were helping were the very same people that often stopped and talked to her. I realized I could step up, she said. You wear a lot of hats in a small town. You have to keep the town running. She's seen many changes during her time on the ambulance squad, including the change from paper forms to the latest online communication that lets the waiting ER staff see the patient report before they arrive at the hospital. One thing remains constant, though. The adrenaline kicks in and you do your job, she said. We have a great crew and we're always looking for volunteers. Farnham is married to Trent Farnham. They have two children, Morgan, a junior at Iowa State University in Ames, and Grant, age 17, who will be a junior at Southeast Valley High School in the fall. Farming is the other family business. I don't have a lot to do with that. I do take credit for it, though, she joked. Farnham is also the current leader of the Gowrie Groundbreakers 4-H Club. I was a 4-H'er. My kids were in 4-H since fourth grade. One of the leaders asked me to co-lead, she said. It's a very rewarding role. I love seeing the kids grow up, she said, especially seeing their communication skills and confidence grow. I love seeing their growth through their projects. Farnham is also the current secretary of the Gowrie Development Commission, and she serves on its downtown committee. She helped with a project that joined both the Gowrie Groundbreakers 4-H Club and the Downtown Committee. Members of the club planted flowers in the planters located throughout the downtown business district. Farnham also serves on the Gowrie Grocery LLC board. They operate the Market on Market store, which opened in April 2020. After the community raised $250,000 to purchase it from former owner Nick Graham, who operated it as Jamboree Foods. At the time, the store was expected to close. "We were trying to get people to stay local," she said. "We opened during COVID. What a great time to get into running a grocery store." Today, she can look across the street and see the result of all the work the community invested. The store is open and a steady stream of customers go in to shop. "We take a lot of pride in that," she said. "I would hate to see that as an empty storefront." There's an added bonus for her as well. "It's convenient if I forgot my lunch," she said. "They cook better than I do." Farnham is also a member of the Zion Lutheran Church. "I'm in the handbell choir," she said. "It's a lot of fun." Farnham encourages others to get involved. "There's always something that needs to be done," she said. "Step up and volunteer. You can actually make a big impact. It's really neat how we all work together here," she said. Our next local story has a headline that reads, "Iowa Central Health Sciences Programs Welcome New Patient Simulator. AI-enhanced mannequin is first in Iowa and region." Iowa Central Community College Health Sciences students have a new learning tool in their state-of-the-art simulation center on the fourth floor of Unity Point Health Trinity Regional Medical Center. The college recently purchased an artificial intelligence-enhanced patient simulator mannequin known as the HAL S5301, built by Gomard Scientific. HAL, as he is named, joins the family of hyper-realistic mannequins in the William G. and Marla Smith Simulation Center. HAL is the first AI-enhanced patient simulator in Iowa and the Upper Midwest region, said Iowa Central President Jesse Ulrich. Large medical centers like the Mayo Clinic and the University of Iowa Hospital and Clinics don't even have a HAL. The mannequin cost $135,000, Ulrich said. In addition to the health sciences students, including nursing, emergency medicine, and radiology, staff at Unity Point use the simulation center for competency testing, patient care orientation, and continuing education. On Friday, Iowa Central and Unity Point hosted an open house to unveil HAL. State Representative Ann Meyer, a Republican from Fort Dodge, who is a registered nurse and former clinical nursing instructor at the college, gave a demonstration of a patient assessment with HAL. "HAL is about as close to a real human patient as it gets," said Julie Mertens, Simulation Center Coordinator. "He can cry, sweat, bleed, breathe, talk, and blink. He can have a seizure, go into cardiac arrest, and even present signs of a stroke. He even has a pulse and a heartbeat. It's remarkable what he can do," she said. "What makes HAL different from the other realistic patient simulator mannequins on the floor is that he can be operated by artificial intelligence, so there isn't a need to have an instructor sitting in a control room using computer software to control the mannequin's movement, speech, and physical response to the medical care given by the nursing students. Pretty much everything that we do on a real patient, we can do on HAL," Mertens said. "It's a new step of realism. HAL is programmed to know his patient information, name, date of birth, medical history, and other background. And it will use AI to learn everything else from the students' and instructor conversations. It's such a great time to be a health sciences student," Merton said. According to Ulrich, Iowa Central has about 150 nursing students this year. "Fortunately, with the simulation center that we have here, not all their clinical hours have to be bedside. Some of it can be substituted," he said. So that allows us to put more students through in a year than if we just had clinical rotations, he said. Students are able to use the labs in the simulation center to practice nursing and clinical skills in a much more forgiving environment. This is a place where they can make mistakes and not kill anybody, Myers said. This is really one of the best places to learn. The addition of the HAL mannequin is just the most recent investment into the simulation center, which opened at the hospital in 2016. We've invested $750,000 this year alone to replace all the mannequins up here in this unit, and that doesn't include the new technology that we've been putting in the new career academy that has the health sciences focus in Storm Lake and in Webster City, Ulrich said. We're investing a lot in our healthcare students because it's obviously desperately needed right now. Our next local news story has a headline that reads, Shoreline Dispute Continues. Twin Lakes residents, Calhoun County, in disagreement. And the dateline is Twin Lakes. Back in the 1850s, a decade after Iowa became a state, people started living in the Twin Lakes area in Calhoun County. In 1867, a road was created at the High Point close to the lake to connect two stagecoach stops for people traveling from Fort Dodge to Sioux City. Over succeeding decades, what became known as the unincorporated Twin Lakes area in rural Rockwell City and rural Manson developed into a place for people living around the lake to have docks and boats. Today, after a five-year period of back-and-forth legal maneuverings without resolution, a group of 31 homeowners in what is known as the Goodell's Addition is going public with their battle with the Calhoun County Board of Supervisors. At issue is whether the county or Goodell's Addition landowners own the shoreline. Todd Essing, who has compiled a lot of information from the county concerning attorney fees and court filings, said he is speaking on behalf of all the landowners, who agree it is time to publicly air the protracted battle, since the county in July began working with a third attorney. Essing in early September said the county is not wisely spending taxpayer money. After obtaining documents through the Iowa Open Records Law, he said at least $67,000 has been spent in attorney costs, and he is expecting some legal action by the county in the near future. They want a different answer with a third attorney, Essing said. For 5 years, we have been stonewalled. While this issue has played out in some Calhoun County Board of Supervisors meetings in recent years, that entity declined to give an update as to where things stand concerning Twin Lakes. Calhoun County Board of Supervisors Chairman Scott Jacobs of Auburn told the Messenger, quote, I have been advised by legal counsel that since this matter might go to court, I am not to comment at this time. Twin Lakes is not a town, but rather a census-designated place, Essing said. The protracted dispute began when the county board wrote a letter to one of Goodell Addition landowners with concerns over ownership of the shoreline. If the county could win control of the shoreline, where the 31 people live, it could conceivably open 1,500 feet of the land to public access for fishing, swimming, and other uses. The county already has four other shorefront areas it publicly maintains, Essing noted. In addition to the people living in homes adjacent to the lake, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources operates Twin Lakes State Park. Essing noted that the County Board of Supervisors have stated that IDNR, quote, started all this. There have been a lot of machinations and a lot of back and forth discussions with some arcane legal assertions by both sides to get the matter settled. there have been some public county board meetings, such as in November 2019, when Essing was optimistic a resolution was at hand. Essing, who is a retired Army officer and former mortgage banker, said that optimism soon faded thereafter. The county at one point proposed a dock management plan. The Calhoun County Board of Supervisors have used an attorney from Algona and also an attorney found with the help of the Iowa State Association of Counties, and there has been no resolution over how many feet the width of the easements on Twin Lakes Road should be. Some of the homeowners have retained their own attorneys. Essing said some public legal assertions by Calhoun County officials about the, quote, so-called public trust to support their position are offset by an Iowa Supreme Court ruling. Essing cited what he sees as a key step in the Twin Lakes development in the original land patent for 40 acres that came from U.S. President James Buchanan in 1855 concerning Government Lot 2, which includes the shoreline and land upon which the 31 residents live. The patent starts the homeowner's ownership, Essing said. This is the root of our title to the shorefront. We own the lake shorefront of our lots, according to Iowa law. The county has no proof of ownership and has harassed the landowners for 5 long years with zero evidence. The ultimate resolution remains up in the air. Essing said the county board has told him the new attorney will seek a lawsuit for declaratory judgment. Most people around Calhoun County thought this was resolved. We've kept it quiet, trying to negotiate a common sense solution to agree to a 42-foot easement, he said. This local news story has a headline that reads, Iowa Central enrollment continues upward trend. 4,900 students start fall semester. For the third year in a row, enrollment at Iowa Central Community College is continuing to increase. For the fall 2023 semester, Iowa Central President Jesse Ulrich announced that the total increase in credit hours from 1 year ago is up 0.54%, continuing the upward enrollment trend to a total of 12.34% increase since the fall 2020 semester. Tom Beneke, Vice President of Student Services and Enrollment Management, reported that total enrollment for the fall 2023 semester includes 4,934 students, taking a combined 51,503 credit hours, up from 51,257.5 total credit hours 1 year ago. Core credit enrollment also increased 5.79% in 2023 to 34,074 credits, up from last year's 32,208. Distance learning enrollment in the 8-week online programs increased 30.3% from 3,661 total credit hours in 2022 to 4,771 credit hours in 2023. The largest overall growth area was seen in the number of students enrolled in Iowa Central's Triton Academies. Enrollment increased 93% from high school students taking 559 credits in 2022 to 1,083 credits in 2023. In addition to the increase in credit hours, Ulrich said students living in on-campus housing increased by around 40 students from 1 year ago. We are sitting at very good numbers as we head into the new academic year, Ulrich said of the increases. Beneke said it is a campus-wide effort to see positive growth. When you see numbers like this, it's a college-wide effort. It's not just one department or group of staff that makes this happen. It is a unified effort, he said. He credits both student life and a positive workplace environment for the college's success. "Our faculty and staff make the students a priority," said Beneke. "When people come to our campus, they see it and feel it, and they want to be here. Everyone from our president on down has a responsibility to recruit and retain students at Iowa Central, and it really does take everybody to grow our enrollment." Our next local news story has a headline that reads, "Fort Dodge Community School District Recognized for Financial Report." The Fort Dodge Community School District has been recognized for its financial practices. The district has been awarded the Certificate of Excellence in Financial Reporting by the Association of School Business Officials International. The award is specifically for the annual comprehensive financial report for the fiscal year that ended June 30, 2022. The certificate is to promote and recognize excellence in financial reporting, according to Siobhan McMahon, the Chief Operations Officer and Interim Executive Director of the association. The annual comprehensive financial report informs stakeholders about the financial and economic state of the district, making it an important communications tool for building trust and engaging with the community, McMahon said in a written statement. The school district had submitted its report for review by a team of financial professionals. Since it met the requirements of the program, the Certificate of Excellence was awarded. And you are listening to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, September 18th on IRIS, Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Starting off today's obituaries, we remember William D. Halverson. William D. Halverson, age 84, of Fort Dodge, passed away Friday, September 15th at his home. A celebration of life will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday, September 21st, in the chapel of Laufersweiler Funeral Home. A prayer service will start at 6 p.m. with military rites by the U.S. Army Honor Guard and the VFW Post 1856 to follow immediately after the service. William is survived by his children, Mitch Halverson of Fort Dodge, Eric Halverson of Janesville, Wisconsin, and Teresa Hillner of Scottsdale, Arizona. Grandchildren Ryan, Nathan, Kelsey, Hunter, Hannah, Hayden, and Jack Hillner, and great-grandchildren Beau, Emmett, and Hayes, and sister Judith Brown of Sheboygan, Wisconsin. William is preceded in death by his wife, Betty, his parents, Harold and Ruth Stoker Halverson, and eight siblings. William Dennis Halverson was born December 20, 1938, in Black River Falls, Wisconsin. He graduated from Black River Falls High School. In April of 1965, he was united in marriage to Betty Steele. The couple made their home in Fort Dodge, where they raised their family. They later moved to Janesville, Wisconsin, and returned to Fort Dodge in the late 1990s. Bill was employed with Hormel's for over 34 years. He was an avid Green Bay Packers fan, and nothing got in the way of Saturday Iowa Hawkeye football games. Bill loved playing cards and was always telling jokes. He will be missed by those who knew him and loved him. Memorials may be left to the discretion of the family. Next, we remember Court M. Callensrud. Court M. Callensrud, age 22 of Fort Dodge, passed away Friday, September 15th at Trinity Regional Medical Center. Visitation and celebration of life will be held Wednesday, September 20th from 4 to 7 p.m. at Laufersweiler Seavers Funeral Home. Court is survived by his mother, Emily Reese, father, Michael Callensrud, sisters Gracie, Kia Reese, Malaya Moore Reese, and McKenna Moore Reese, paternal grandparents Sandy Callensrud of Spirit Lake and Earl Callensrud of Kansas City, Missouri. Diana Kraus of Colville, and Deb Costner Reese of Fort Dodge. Aunts and uncles Jim and Carrie Reese, Tracy Reese and Amy Reese, Tanya and Nathan Himley, and numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. Preceded in death by his maternal grandparents, Papa Pat Reese and cousin Detoria Reese. Court Michael Collinsrud was born November 3, 2000 in Fort Dodge. He attended the Humboldt school system, graduating in 2019 from Humboldt High School. Court enjoyed motorsports, the outdoors, and had a great sense of humor. Memorials may be left to the discretion of the family. Next, we remember Kathleen Roakes. Kathleen Roakes, age 62, formerly of Fort Dodge and currently of Des Moines, passed away Saturday, September 16th at Mercy Hospital in Des Moines. Services are pending. Loffersweiler Funeral Home is serving the family. Next, we remember Trellis Kitt. Memorial Mass of a Christian burial will be held for Trellis Kitt, age 84, of Sac City at 10:30 a.m. Thursday at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Sac City. Visitation is 9 to 10:30 a.m. Thursday at the church. Next, we remember Marvin J. DeWall. Marvin J. DeWall, age 81, of Palmer, passed away Thursday, September 14th at Westview Care Center in Britt. Memorial services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 23rd at St. John Lutheran Church in Lizard Township near Palmer, with lay pastor Marlene Nimke officiating. Burial will be in Summit Hill Cemetery in Pocahontas. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, September 23rd at the church near Palmer. Powers Funeral Home of Pocahontas is handling the arrangements. For online condolences and obituaries, visit powersfh.net. Next, we remember Dwayne Larson. Dwayne A. Larson, age 91, of Humboldt, passed away peacefully on Thursday evening, September 14th, at the West Bend Health Care and Rehabilitation Center. He is survived by his wife Sharon, his children Christy Cavanaugh, Scott Larson, Corey Larson, and Dan Larson. Four grandchildren, Jennifer Van Boning, Nathan Betts, Cody Stone, and Desiree David, as well as eight great-grandchildren and his brother, John Larson. He was preceded in death by his parents, brother James and Virgil, son-in-law John Cavanaugh, daughter-in-law Rosalie Larson, and his grandson, Jack Cavanaugh. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. on Thursday, September 21st at Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Humboldt. Visitation will be from 1 p.m. until service time at the church. Burial with military rites by the Sathers Odd Guard, VFW, and American Legion will be in the Union Cemetery in Humboldt. The Mason Linhart Funeral and Cremation Services is in charge of arrangements. Next, we remember Guy Anthony Dewey. Guy Anthony Dewey, age 63, passed away unexpectedly on Friday, September 8th at his home in Rolfe. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, September 20th at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Rolfe, with Pastor Don Bell officiating. Burial will be in the Clinton Garfield Cemetery near Rolfe. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Tuesday, September 19th at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Rolfe. Powers Funeral Home of Rolfe is handling the arrangements. Next, we remember Jack Montgomery. Jack D. Montgomery, age 90, of Duncombe, passed away peacefully Wednesday, September 13th at the Paula J. Baber Hospice Home. His family gathered to spend the precious moments before his passing. His last joke was, quote, "I'm so good, it scares me." Jack's wishes were to be cremated with no formal funeral service. A celebration of life will be held at a later date, with a private urn burial at McGuire Bend Cemetery in Dayton. Laufersweiler Funeral Home is serving the family. Jack Denny Montgomery was born July 23, 1933 in Fort Dodge. He was raised in the Brushy Creek area and often told stories of his adventures with his siblings near their home, which now resides under Brushy Lake itself. Jack started working at Hormel in Fort Dodge at the age of 17 until the plant closed when he was 49 years old. During that time, on June 12, 1955, he was united in marriage to Darlene Ray Summers, and in 1962 they established their home southwest of Duncombe, along the Des Moines River, where they raised their family. Once the Hormel plant closed, Jack worked at the Van Diest Supply Warehouse to keep himself busy until Darlene retired. Anyone that knew Jack, has heard the phrases, as a rule, just before he shared some wisdom, or a man could probably, just before he'd let you know how he would complete a project. He will be remembered as a stubborn horse trader by many, a happy, smiling face by others, and his dad, Grandpa, Gramps, Pops, and a few other nicknames by his family. Jack is survived by his children, Jeff Montgomery of Duncombe, Jane Germeland of Duncombe, Mark Montgomery of Duncombe, Mitch Montgomery of Urbandale, as well as grandchildren Jody Clark, Joe Montgomery, Jackson Montgomery, John Germeland, Cindy Bacon, Lori Summers, Tony Deal, Sarah Montgomery, Hannah Gronbach, Jada Montgomery, Dixon Montgomery, and Amanda Ollins, as well as 21 great-grandchildren and 9 great-great-grandchildren, and brother Gould Jr., also known as Junie Montgomery of Kalo. He was preceded in death by his loving wife Darlene, his parents Gould Sr. and Alice Andrews Montgomery, siblings Aaron, Sherman, James, Eva Rank, Vernie Ford, and Vi Nelson. Jack expressed gratitude for having the support of family, neighbors, and a great group of caretakers over the last few years to help him remain in his home until the end. Memorials may be left to the family's discretion. Next, we remember John, or Jackie, was as he was known, Stewart. John Jack Stewart passed away surrounded by his family on Wednesday, August 23rd. Services will be held on Saturday, September 30th at Christ Episcopal Church, with social hour starting at 10 a.m. and services starting at 11 a.m. John was born on March 12, 1931 in Mason City and was raised by Robert and Irene Stewart. After graduating from Fort Dodge Senior High, he went on to attend Coe College, where he played football and basketball. After graduating from Coe College, he served in the Air Force. Then he spent his entire career working for Collins Radio Rockwell, where he eventually became the director of purchasing. John was an avid golfer, enjoyed cycling and exercising, and cheering for the Iowa Hawkeyes and the Cubs. John spent countless hours volunteering at McKinley basketball program. Here he met and bonded with Coach Mike Moore. John also spent countless hours ringing the bell for the Salvation Army. John was strong-willed and stubborn at times, but he also had an enormous heart and wonderful sense of humor. He loved going to his Fort Dodge High School class reunions, as did the rest of his class. Anyone who came into John's orbit became aware they were in the presence of a man that was warm, generous, funny, but direct. And this is reflected through life's work, his kids and his grandkids. John is preceded in death by his wife of 64 years, Gertrude, or Trudy as she was known, Stewart. He is survived by his son Bob, son David, and daughter Anne. Also, his 5 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. The family would like to thank Unity Point Hospice and the staff at Grand Living. In lieu of flowers, the family would like contributions directed to the Salvation Army. Online condolences may be directed to the family at cedarmemorial.com under obituaries. Next, we remember Denzel Davis. Denzel Davis, age 80 of Fort Dodge, died September 15th at Bethany Life in Storrs City. Funeral arrangements are pending at Gunderson Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Next, we remember Donald, or Joe as he was known, High. Donald Joe High, age 89, of Williams, died on Wednesday, September 13th. A private family service will be held at a later date. Bowman Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Next, we remember Jeffrey Roberts. A visitation for Jeffrey will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Wednesday, September 20th at Powers Funeral Home in Pocahontas. No further services are planned at this time. And finally, we remember Linda Liu. Funeral services for Linda will be at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday, September 19th at Belmont United Methodist Church in Belmont. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Monday, today, September 18th, at the Ewing Funeral Home in Belmont. And turning to birthdays, Joan McLaughlin of Fort Dodge is celebrating her 90th birthday on September 28th. Cards may be sent to her at 1270 North 7th Street in Fort Dodge. She was born on September 28th, 1933. And now turning to some local sports headlines. This one reads, Eastman doubles up at Winker Invite. The last invitational that Fort Dodge swim team competed in was about times and getting faster. On Saturday, it was about swimming in front of friends and family and getting on the podium. The Dodger girls finished second at the Gary Winkler Invitational, compiling 461 team points. Sioux City Metro had 501 points and was the team champion. Spencer came in at 400 points, was third, followed by Carroll at 360 and Algona at 222. It was wonderful to have so many fans and parents, said Fort Dodge head coach Ashley Beaumont. It was a big crowd and we had so many people cheering the girls on, she said. The Dodgers captured three titles. Julia Eastman was a double and was also part of the winning 200 medley relay. The Dodgers had 16 podium finishes with top six performances. When we swam at Linmar, it was against some good teams and getting good times, Beaumont said. This was about having the girls figuring out where they would be best at and getting some podium spots. Eastman earned a PR in the 200 IM at 2 minutes 16 seconds, 0.68. She was nearly 2 seconds faster than Emmy Myers at 2 minutes 18 seconds, 0.55 of Carroll in the IM. Eastman's time of 1 minute 3 seconds, 0.24 in the 100 butterfly was just ahead of teammate Harvey at 1 minute 6 seconds, 0.08. Julia swam really well, Beaumont said. She got a chance to swim against Emma Myers of Carroll, who is tough. When you have someone to swim against, it is helpful to cut your time. Eastman swam the first leg of the 200 medley, followed by Reagan Woolridge, Gracie Harvey, and Haley Vogel. The Dodgers touched the wall in 1 minute 57 seconds, 0.35. They swam awesome in the 200 medley relay, Beaumont said. They were not seated first, and this gives them great confidence. We have a mix of upper and underclassmen on this relay, so it was great to see them come up on top. Vogel was tipped at the wall in the 50 freestyle, finishing second. Vogel finished 25 seconds, 0.76, while Spencer's Brooklyn Ferguson had 25 seconds, 0.25, was the winner. Vogel was also second in the 100 freestyle. She touched the wall in 56 seconds, 0.42. Addison Olke had 55 seconds, 0.13. She's of Sioux City Metro and was the winner. Delaney O'Connor was second in diving with 293.6 points. Reese Taylor of Algona was the champion with 435 points. Finishing third for the Dodgers were Addison Daniel in the 200 freestyle with 2 minutes 14 seconds 0.1, Harvey with 2 minutes 29 seconds 0.56 in the 200 IM, and Wooldridge at 6 minutes 0.2 seconds 0.27 in the 500 freestyle. Wooldridge was fourth in the 100 breaststroke at 1 minute 13 seconds 0.69. The quartet of Vogel, Harvey, Kylan Lubinsky, and Eastman were fourth in the 200 freestyle relay with 1 minute 47 seconds 0.24. Lubinsky, Daniel, Rachel Moody, and O'Connor placed fourth in the 400 freestyle. Being able to get a lot of girls in the pool in your own pool is great, Beaumont said, and it wasn't just about that. The girls swam really well and turned in some good times, she said. The Dodgers are back in action on Tuesday when they host Mason City in the Dodger pool. And continuing with local sports headlines, this one reads, Iowa Central wins big on the road. The dateline is Iowa Falls. The sixth-ranked Iowa Central football team quickly erased a small deficit here Saturday versus longtime rival Ellsworth. From there, the Tritons imposed their will, pounding on the Panthers to the tune of a 62-13 victory. Iowa Central, who's 3-1 overall and 1-0 in the ICCAC, rebounded following a tough 27-2 setback to top-ranked Hutchison, as Mario Saunders continued to add to his nation-leading numbers with 7 receptions for 181 yards and 2 touchdowns. Justin Silverstein finished 12 of 15 for 172 with the 2 TD strikes, as Logan Williams and Bryce Aspingen both tossed touchdowns. Lawrence Lacking and Ethan John both caught scores, with Jalen Washington running in 2 scores. Saunders added a 3rd touchdown with his legs, and Adriel Fussell also found the end zone for the Tritons, who built a commanding 48-13 lead at the half. Isaiah Bruce led the defense with 2 sacks, as the Tritons recorded 8 in the game. Caleb Moore, Malachi Bird, Eli West, and Jamal Spiey all picked off passes. Iowa Central will remain on the road, heading to Illinois on Saturday to meet top-ranked Division III College of DuPage in Glen Ellyn. DuPage moved to 4-0 with a 38-31 victory over North Dakota College of Science this past weekend, and also edged Ellsworth in their opener 17-10. And now turning to business briefs. This headline reads, Virtual Mental Health Care Available Through McCrary-Rost Clinics. The dateline is Lake City. Stewart Memorial Community Hospital and McCrary-Rost Clinics have hired Kate DeWall, a licensed Iowa social worker, to offer virtual therapy for patients of all ages and backgrounds. She brings with her a decade of experience, cultural competency, and a loyal following of patients. She holds a master's degree in social work from St. Ambrose University in Davenport. Ms. DeWall's depth of experience, knowledge, and compassion will complement our organization well, said SMCH Chief Clinic Officer Lee Miller. DeWall specializes in a variety of mental health topics, including conflict resolution, healthy relationships, stress relief, trauma, abuse, food and gut health, the importance of social connection, and more. There's a great need for mental health care in rural areas like ours, said Miller. Adding her to our team will help assuage this need in the most convenient way possible. DeWall is currently available every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. To schedule a virtual appointment with DeWall, call McCrary-Rost Clinic in Lake City at 712-464-7907. And continuing with business briefs, we have this headline: Green State Credit Union appoints Fanning as interim CEO. Green State Credit Union, which has an office in Fort Dodge, announced that Todd Fanning, the company's chief financial officer, has been appointed interim chief executive officer effective immediately. He succeeds Jeff Disterhoff, who has retired. The Green State Board of Directors has commenced a comprehensive search process to identify a permanent CEO. To assist in the process, the board has engaged Spencer Stewart, a leading executive search firm, and will evaluate both internal and external candidates for the role. Fanning joined Green State in 2012 as its CFO and has overseen the company's financial planning and analysis, accounting and risk functions. He has more than 30 years of executive leadership expertise in the banking industry, previously serving as CFO, Chief Operating Officer, and member of the Board of Directors of Citizens First National Bank. Fred Mims, chair of the board, said Todd has been an invaluable member of our leadership team over the past decade, and his deep understanding of our business, our members, and our communities makes him the ideal person to step into this interim CEO role. The board is committed to conducting a comprehensive search to identify the best candidate to serve as the next CEO and steward the next chapter of success for Green State. On behalf of everyone at Green State, I want to thank Jeff for his valuable contributions and many years of service. Fanning said, "I look forward to continuing my work with the board, leadership team, and all of our constituencies to meet the financial needs of our valued members. With Green State's well-established brand and talented team, we are focusing on delivering value to our members while executing on our business strategy and providing exceptional service." And that concludes today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, September 18th. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening, and make it a great Monday.
This is Jim Ralston, and I'm with IRIS, Short Take from the Iowa Curiosities. Farmers and their toys, Dyersville, Iowa. If the wisdom on bumper stickers is true, and those with the most toys truly do win, Then the National Farm Toy Museum in Dyersville is a winner many times over, with two floors of more than 30,000 farm toys and exhibits, ranging from row after row of common tractors to combines, harvesters, and haulers, all the way down the extensive agricultural machinery lineup to an anhydrous ammonia tanker. The museum is a shrine and miniature to the heavy equipment Iowa farmers fuss over, endlessly fix, periodically live in during planting or harvesting, and tirelessly operate to bring home the grain or the beans that bring home the bacon. And don't let the word toy fool you. The only thing toy-like about these farm toys is that they're built to 1/16th or 1/32nd scale, and don't have internal combustion engines. This is Iowa, after all. Farm machines aren't child's play, even when they're toys. Most of the toys are stunningly accurate, not to mention beautiful. Replicas of tractors or combines with particular makers like John Deere and Case, from particular years, with details accurate down to the windshield wipers. Children play with these toys not only to have fun, they got a vocational education in heavy equipment. Highlights of the museum include an exhibit explaining the notion of scale that features a full-size replica of a John Deere tractor accompanied by a row of successfully smaller scale models, from 1/2 scale all the way down to a realistically looking tractor you can carry in your pocket. Upstairs, look for more tractors and harvesters, enclosed in glass cases, more perhaps than you've ever hoped to see. And though the word toy does technically appear in this museum's name, don't expect much playing around. Tractors, trucks, trailers, and combines, even at 1/32nd or 1/64 scale, are way too wrapped up in Iowa's blood, sweat, and sorrow to be simple objects of play. Don't be surprised if you see some old-timer kicking the tires of a tiny Case combine, wondering how it would hold up harvesting more than 2,000 acres. Or some young, unquietly cussing pocket-sized John Deere because it won't turn over. The National Farm Toy Museum is at the intersection of US 20 and Iowa Highway 136 in Dyersville. Open daily from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., the museum also hosts a number of special events. Exhibits throughout the year, the largest of which is the granddaddy of all farm toy shows, held the first full weekend in November. For more information, call 563-875-2727 or visit www.nationalfarmtoymuseum.com. That was an excerpt from Iowa Curiosities, Quirky Characters, Roadside Oddities, and Other Offbeat Stuff by Eric Jones, Dan Coffey, and Barrett Thorkelson.